Hey, this podcast is not kid friendly. So if you don't want your kid to hear about sex and the word shit and all that other stuff, you should probably get them out of the room right now.
Everybody has a secret.
This is Beyond the Secret, an anonymous podcast where I uncover the truth behind people's deepest secrets. My name is Ace Fanning, and I want to know,
what's your secret?
Welcome back to another week of Beyond the Secret. Guys, this week's secret is unlike any of the secrets that I've ever shared in the past. Mainly because this week's secret is not a secret at all. In fact, if you go to Google and type in Avondale quads, you'll get about 70,000 results. There are websites upon websites dedicated to this story, articles, videos. But the problem is, so much of what these websites and stories are focusing on is a woman named Elizabeth Shannon Whittle. And I don't want to focus on her. So today, I'm going to focus on somebody else. Somebody who I think is a lot more important in this story. And I hope her story touches you. So, this week's secret, I am one of the Avondale quads. To prepare for this interview, I did some research and I don't want to be the person to tell your story. And so I just want to ask if you can give us the information that you have on what happened.
Okay. So from what I know is my birth parents, they were just getting together. They really weren't into like the whole like serious thing. I have a sister who's about 6 years older than me, but she has Down syndrome. And that plays into the factor of this story later. But basically what happened was my birth mom and my birth dad got pregnant basically on accident. They weren't going through fertility or anything, no IVF, and she got pregnant with quadruplets. And it was a big story because the way the situation was there was two sacks and my brothers were in one and I was in another, and there was three boys and one girl. And she went through the whole pregnancy. Everything was fine. It was in the news. And then she gave birth to us at 32 weeks. We were healthy. From what I was told, we went home within a week. We were all 3 pounds, healthy babies. And then she was offered all these gifts and all this, like someone was building a house for her and she was offered all of this help. And 2 months into us being born, my birth mom just snapped. And she just did severe abuse on me and my brothers. And we were taken about a month and a half later when doctors finally caught on to what was going on. And then we were split up into homes after we got taken and were put in the hospital and recovered and all that jazz. And so that's basically what I know about the story as far as that goes.
So, that is a lot to just unpack.
Yeah.
How did your mom get? So here's where I have a hard time with this story is on my podcast. I currently have an episode up about postpartum psychosis. Mm-hmm. And listening to that story just completely changed my mind about everything. Everything I had ever thought. And I don't want to say how did your mom, you know, I don't want to say how did your mom get caught? Like, you know, she was a criminal, but she was a criminal.
So she got caught by my brother, who is completely paralyzed because of the abuse. And he has, he can't walk or talk or see. Because of the abuse, she did the abuse and then she brought him into the hospital because she realized what she did. And then they took him. But what happened was, for some stupid reason, they didn't see the signs of child abuse. So they let my brother go home. And then about 2 weeks later, she brought me in and my brother. And that's when they finally connected the dots of, oh, shit, basically, like, there's child abuse going on in this home. And that's basically how she got caught with the whole child abuse on me and all three of my brothers.
Can I ask you, what type of things did the doctors see from you guys?
They saw severe shaken baby syndrome, severe broken bones, bruising, basically everything that you're not supposed to see in a baby when they come into the hospital for anything, basically. It was out of the ordinary. I don't know how they didn't see it to begin with, but they didn't catch it the first time. And then the second time is when it got really, really bad.
So doctors alert authorities and they come. I'm assuming they take your mom. And then what happens with you and your brothers?
We were in the hospital for a little bit. I don't know the time frame. No one really talked about the time frame. But basically, we were in the hospital until we were able to go into foster homes, and we were split. Two of my brothers went into a home together, and then me and my other brother, because we had the severe health problems because of the abuse, we had to be put into a home together because of just the amount of doctor's appointments and just the amount of, like, watching we had to get.
So the four of you essentially grew up separate, like the two of you together?
So the two boys, they lived together, and then me and my other brother were split. So we all basically just didn't live together our whole lives.
Did you grow up seeing your brothers, or?
Yes. So we saw each other up until we were about five a couple times a year. We would do like play dates and pictures and birthday parties. And then from basically when we started kindergarten until we were 18, it was like a once, maybe twice a year thing, but it was for sure on our birthdays. Like, our parents made sure we saw each other at least once a year.
What happened to your sister, the 6 year old?
She got put into custody with my, birth grandma. And she's lived with her since.
And none of you guys went to family members? You just went to foster families? Can I ask you, what sort of lingering effects did this abuse have on you? Not mentally yet, but like physically.
Physically? I had to go through physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy up until I was about, I think, four. My parents, my adopted parents, were told that I would be I would have cerebral palsy in the left side of my body. I had to get a shunt, which is a tube, essentially, from what I think, that basically drains the fluid from shaken baby syndrome in the brain. And then I had to get a cranial cap, which is a head shaper, basically, which a lot of babies get. But that was just because of the severe trauma to my head. And then my parents were also told, like, she probably won't graduate high school. She'll probably be in sped ed classes, because at that time they didn't really know how bad neurologically the damage was, because my parents were told that a lot of my brain was dead from the fluid.
And what about your brothers and their physical damage?
So two of the boys that are identical twins that live together, they don't have very many problems physically. They're perfectly healthy as far as physical goes. They don't have any signs of like cerebral palsy. They don't have any signs of really any physical damage. And then my other brother, though, he got the worst of all of us, and he can no longer, he hasn't been able to walk, talk, or see.
Do you and your siblings talk about this?
We didn't talk about it until she was released from prison. We purposely did not talk about it because we all have different opinions on the situation, but we all agree on a lot of things, but we kind of just kept it like to ourselves.
Can I ask what the difference of opinions are?
One of my brothers forgives her completely. Another one of my brothers actually had contact with her after she was released. And then my other brother, who is paralyzed and can't talk and see, he doesn't have any recollection of anything.
And what about you?
I do forgive her, kind of. It's been really hard. For me, I forgive her, but for my brother, who's paralyzed because of her, I just can't let go of that. That's just what makes me angry and upset.
You guys are taken. Your mom is... Does she go through, like, a court hearing? Is she...
Oh, she was put on trial immediately.
Okay.
The trial was 2.5 years, actually.
What?
It was an extensive trial because she kept saying that we had brittle bone disease and she didn't do anything wrong. And then she blamed my sister, who has Down syndrome, the six-year-old. She blamed her for all of it. And then she said she didn't do anything. She doesn't know why this is happening, basically. Yeah, so it was an extensive trial just because they had to go through all of our broken bones that they had to show the jury. They had to come to conclusions on how long she was going to be sentenced for, what her sentencing was going to be, how many counts was she going to get. They had to go through how we were developing and what our situations were after we were taken. And it was a really long process. Yeah, it took 2.5 years before the case was closed.
Was there anyone who was believing that she didn't do this?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was insane. I had people tell me that she did nothing wrong. She had nothing to do with this. They don't know why it was such a big profile case. She's completely innocent. She shouldn't have served the time that she did serve. That we were manipulated when we were kids and that it was just... Yeah, I've been told many times by people, and even to this day, she says she did nothing wrong.
And okay, so what do people believe then? If they don't believe it was her, do people actually believe that your six-year-old Down syndrome sister did this to you guys?
They either think that, or they think that we actually had physical and neurological problems that caused it.
Your mom is found guilty, and she's sentenced to... jail for how long?
So her original sentence was 172 years of prison with 13 counts of child abuse.
But you're telling me I'm assuming you're not 172.
Yep. Nope. She, so then when we were about 5, someone figured out some stupid freaking way. I don't know why, but somebody was able to reduce her sentencing down to 16 years in prison and 2 years probation.
Why?
I don't know. To this day, it baffles me because when we turned 18, she was released in late September. And then she served about 2 years probation. And now she's no longer on probation.
Did anyone try to fight to get her to not be released?
Yes.
And they were just like, too bad. Like, she's taken
guilty
one child and literally for his entire life. I don't want to be insensitive, but he's never going to live a normal life.
Basically, yeah.
And she did that. And they were just like, yeah, 17 years is good.
Yep.
So she gets out of prison and what happens?
So she gets out of prison and basically what happens is about, I want to say, I can't remember, but basically within like a couple months, I want to say after she was released, that's when the news story dropped about what we're doing now with our lives. And then she hasn't contacted me. But she was in contact with one of my brothers for about 6 months.
Is she allowed to contact you guys?
When she was on probation, no. But now she can. And she won't get in trouble for it.
And did she send you guys letters? Did she... Like, no. What did she say to your brother?
So my two brothers had contact with her mom. One of them stopped contact when he was about 13, when he realized that she still said to my brothers, like, your mom did nothing wrong. I don't know why, like, you're still being told this, like, that she did everything wrong. So my brother stepped out and he was like, I'm done. Like, my mom did this. And my other brother, he stayed in contact with her. And then when she was released, that's when he decided to have a relationship with her for 6 months.
And what did that relationship look like for 6 months?
From what I was told, it was basically her telling him, I did nothing wrong. I don't know the extent of it just because I'm not really close with that brother anymore. Mm-hmm. But he basically almost lived with her for 6 months.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Do you know why that dissolved?
I don't know if something was said, if he realized that she was crazy. I think that's what it was. Or he just decided to move on from the situation and get out.
I want to ask you, emotionally, mentally, this has literally been your entire life. You guys were only a few months old when she was taken, correct?
Correct.
And so, I mean, it's always hard because it's like, you have no idea what a life is like without this.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you do know other people who don't have a life like this. And what do you feel like has happened to you emotionally and mentally from all of this?
It's hard because I didn't really know my story or where I came from until I was about 12, I want to say, is when I finally got like the rundown of basically what the hell happened in my life. Mentally, it was hard because I never quite understood why I never got to see like my brothers, like why we were split up. All I knew was I was adopted, but it was really annoying because people would put pity on me all the time when they found out my story, mm-hmm. like all the time. They meant well, which I understand, but when a person first met me and they found out my story by either my parents telling them what happened or me just mentioning that I was a quadruplet, because that's a rare thing, so automatically they knew who I was. It was just annoying because from that moment on, I got treated completely different. They didn't see who I was now. They just went by, oh, this poor girl got abused. And so now we're just going to put pity on her basically for the rest of however long I knew them. Or they would be like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry that happened to you. But they would never really ask like, well, what are your views on it? Or how has it affected you? They never really asked the deep down questions that probably should have been asked. It was more of, oh, poor you. Well, I'll give you leeway on this, or I'll give you leeway on that. Or just like, it was just pity all the time up until I was 18. It was just pity all the time. And like I said, they probably meant well, but it was just so annoying because that's not what I wanted when I would tell anybody what happened. So I finally just stopped talking about it.
I feel like I'm in such a hard position right now because I'm like, I want to give you all of my empathy. Like I just, even knowing like I read through the story and I read multiple different things on it, hearing it come directly from your mouth is a lot different than hearing it from a reporter's standpoint, like with just the facts.
Yeah.
And I don't want you to think I'm just giving you pity.
Yeah.
I feel for you. Like,
mm-hmm.
How do you wish people would have reacted?
I mean, so partially with like a lot of friendships that I had growing up, a part of me wishes that I just didn't say anything until later in the friendship or the relationship when they found out who I was, like before they knew who I was before who I am now, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that was partially my fault, was I would tell them who I was probably like, because I mean, it was such a high profile case. I really didn't have anything to hide because there was nothing. It wasn't a big secret. It wasn't like, hey, I'm going to tell you the secret, even though millions of people nationwide knew exactly what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like I had something deep inside of me that I couldn't keep inside. But it was kind of like, the moment I tell you this is who I am, you can look me up in a literally in less than 3 seconds. Yeah. And there goes my privacy. So I wish people would be more like just asking, like, I mean, like when you're kids, you can't ask the hard questions because kids are going to be like, oh, well, like, I'm sorry that like there is pity when it's kids, but like the adults, like they never asked me, well, how do you feel about it? It was always, well, I'm so sorry. It was just pity. Mm-hmm. All the time. And it was just like asking me questions like, well, how do you feel about it? What do you feel about the situation? Like, how has it affected you? No one really ever asked those questions. It was just pity from the moment on.
You almost wish it had been more of a secret.
Yeah.
It's not easy growing up knowing like everyone can just research all the details of your life and who you are and stuff like that.
When I went to high school, I started off at a new high school. I didn't know anybody. I literally maybe knew one person because my parents switched districts. And I told myself, I am not telling anybody anything. I'm going to be this person and that is it. And then later on in the friendship, you will then know. But I'm not going to come off and say it. It's not going to happen. And I kept it a secret. And the only people that really knew were teachers. Because when I was sick so much from it, that's when they started to ask questions, well, why are you so sick all the time? Mm-hmm. And so teachers were really the only people that knew. But I knew in high school, I said, I'm not telling anybody jack squat. Like, I don't want people in my class to Google me, because people would in elementary school and middle school. And granted, it was my fault, but I wish I kept it a secret.
Whatever happened to your birth dad?
He was sentenced 6 years for, it was abandonment. Basically, he was working so much that he didn't know what was going on. So he got sentenced 6 years for not doing anything about it. Essentially, he got out. He's been in and out of prison since for drugs. As far as I know, like car stealing, possibly, I think it wasn't GTA, but it was basically kind of in that area. I've had contact with his niece, but I haven't had direct contact with him.
Do you think he's ever tried to contact any of you guys?
No.
I can't understand, knowing that I have 4 children out there, and just like, nah, I'm not gonna try and connect.
I think from being his biological kid, I think because it was such a high profile case, I think he didn't know how we felt about him, because we had words about her, mm-hmm. but like in the interviews that we did 3 years ago, no one ever asked that question. Well, what about your birth dad?
Yeah.
Well, how do you feel about your birth dad? Like, no, because it was such a spotlight on her. And I think she ruined his life. He wanted to have a relationship with us when we were born. He was over the moon, joyed, happy. And she ruined his life. She took away 4 of his kids, 4 of his miracle babies, basically, from what I was told by a family member. Like, that's a big thing, having quadruplets and all of them survive healthily. And then you go and abuse them and, like, literally take away his 3 sons and his only daughter. That's going to do something on a guy. And I can understand why he wouldn't want to have a relationship with us, just because I feel like he lost that ability to have a relationship with us.
Do you feel like you have trust issues?
Oh, yeah.
How so?
Well, my adopted life was not, it was amazing, don't get me wrong, but as far as like my parents divorced when I was 6, so it was about 3 years after I was adopted. Which normal adopted families don't go through that. So trusting, like, being in a relationship is going out the door from that point on. But also just trusting people with, like, anything. Trusting people with just a simple conversation or knowing who I was. Because if you can't even trust the people that gave birth to you, it's kind of hard to trust people who are not blood.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about something, and we don't have to if you don't want to, but I think it's really important to the story. And that is that you've recently had a child of your own, correct?
Correct. I had a daughter.
When you found out that you were pregnant, I can only imagine the amount. Like, I think any person finding out that they're pregnant, it's an overwhelming feeling of emotion. And then I think about someone like you who has been through so much, and especially knowing that you went through so much as a baby. Did that bring up stuff for you?
Oh, yeah. Even now, like, after she's been born for 6 weeks, it's brought up a lot of crap. Like, emotions I didn't even know I had about, like, my birth mom. You can ask me anything. It's fine. I'm an open book. You're good.
Do you ever look at your baby and think, this is what my mom looked at, and this is how she, like, she was able to hurt me?
Mm-hmm. All the time. All the freaking time. I look at my kid, and, like, postpartum depression is a real thing. And I did listen to that podcast, and that brought up a lot of emotions. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it actually happened is the difference, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like, being able to ask for help, yeah, it's hard. But when it's about your, it's a sensitive subject with that, because I think, like, I look at my daughter and I get tears in my eyes because I look at her and I think, I could never in a million years hurt her ever, or hurt a kid even in general. Like, I worked in a preschool for 3 years, and even when I worked there, it brought up emotions. Like, I would look at a kid like a baby and think, how the fuck do you hurt a kid like that? An innocent child who's literally depending on you. Yes, I understand it was times four, but still, she had all of this help is what makes me mad. Is she literally had tons of people willing to nanny for her for free, to give her a house, to help her every single day. And she didn't take it.
Well, I just think about, like, one of my biggest things in life is, like, I wish that there was no, I just wish that we could completely get rid of the stigma around mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like, in the postpartum psychosis one that I did, like, it's scary to talk about. Like, you don't know how people are going to react. You don't know,
mm-hmm.
you know, is this person, I'm putting this out there right now on this podcast. And I think people would already know this, but if ever anyone ever needed someone to talk to who's not going to judge them for the thoughts that they're having or anything, like, I'll be that person.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so many people don't have that.
Yeah. I always tell, like, my friends, and I think it's because of what I went through. I tell any person I have any interaction with, I'm a judgment-free person. If you need to tell me the most judgmental thing you think could ever come out of someone's mouth, tell me, because I'm not going to be judgmental at all. Mm-hmm. Because of just mental health, people just took it and made it such a negative thing. Like, if you have a mental health issue, like, you're a bad person. And if you're on medications for it, you're a bad person. And it's like, no, that's not how that works. And I think that's honestly what happened with my birth mom, was prior to her pregnancy, she was on medication for bipolar and a couple other mental health issues. And then after she had us, she just never went back on her medications.
It makes me so frustrated, because in the postpartum psychosis one, you know, she said, like, I would go to the doctor and they'd be like, oh, how are you doing? She's like, well, you know, I'm really tired and I'm, you know, I feel like I'm feeling a certain way. And they'd be like, okay, yeah, well, you just had a baby, so that's normal. Like, why mm-hmm. isn't, especially with the publicity around your guys' birth, why was no one checking in on your mom and saying, hey, we recognize, like, you were on this medication before. Now you have four babies, which I could never imagine having four babies at one time. How are you doing? Like, why aren't there, like, weekly check-ins with her that say, hey, like, is everything okay? Like, why is that not happening?
doctors failed on their part on that. I actually met the ultrasound technician that did my birth mom's ultrasounds. It literally was not planned. She ended up just doing one of my ultrasounds. And it was, I cried during that actually, because she got to see me before I was even born, but she was able to answer a few questions. And she said that my birth mom was not very interested throughout the whole pregnancy. So I don't know how that's not a red flag, like as her doctor. She was late to her appointments. She would show up not really put together. And she, from what I was told, she just didn't really have an interest in us from the beginning.
That's the craziest story I've ever heard in my entire life. I literally, like, you said that, and, like, I feel like my heart fell out of my butt.
Like, it was my 12-week checkup. It was a Down syndrome screening, so it was totally, like, not at my doctor's office. It was at a new place I'd never been to. And I kept asking them, are you sure there's not more than one? Because I actually carry the gene for multiples, which is really scary for me for my next pregnancies. But I kept asking that. And she finally asked, she goes, why are you asking me this multiple times? And I said, because I'm a quadruplet. And I kid you not, you could drop a pin in that room. It was so silent. And she looked at me and she just said, I did your mom's ultrasound when she was pregnant with you.
I don't mean to cry. I don't know why I'm crying.
It's okay. I'm crying too. You're totally fine.
Do you believe in God?
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Do you feel like that was God?
Oh, yeah. Because this is going to sound crazy, and I've never told anybody this, so you're the first person, Ace. That day, I asked him to show me a sign that I could do this, that I could get through this pregnancy, because I was so miserable the first trimester. So miserable. I was hospitalized 6 times for dehydration. I was so severely sick. And my biggest thing is to just be the best mom I can be. And I prayed that morning. I was like, show me that I can be a good mom. And when I met her, and then she looked at me and she's like, you're already past your mom. Because of how interested I was in the pregnancy so far, 12 weeks in.
Oh, God. I hate having feelings sometimes.
I'm not a crier, so this is new for me.
Oh, my God. I'm like, that is probably the, in my entire 29 years of living, I feel like that's probably the coolest story I've ever heard in my whole life. And I hope you know that, like, it's probably so, I can only imagine how difficult it is for you to realize, like, there is this person out there who is half of me. Like, you know, you half mm-hmm. of you is your biological mother. And I can only imagine the fears that you had when you found out you were pregnant. And, you know, am I going to be like my mom? Am I going to do the same things that she did? And it's, I fully understand why you were praying for that morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm even so, like, glad that you got that answer.
I remember when I was pregnant, I kept telling my husband, you need to let me know after we have this baby, if you see signs of me getting depressed, if you see baby blues, if you see anything, tell me immediately. And he knows my story. Obviously, we're married, which that took me. We've been together 6 years, so we're high school sweethearts. I didn't tell him who I was for 2 years, 2.5 years, actually. But anyway, so he kept asking why. He was like, why are you so scared? And I said, I'm terrified, terrified to get postpartum depression. I would ask my doctor every week, is there any way I can prevent me getting it? What can I do to prevent getting this? Because I'm so scared because my birth mom did it. Whether it was intentional or non-intentional, I don't know, but she did it. And I have my love for kids in general is my heart, basically. And so I just kept telling my doctor, like, I love this child and she's not even here yet. But how can I keep myself from getting this every week? I'm not even joking. I asked him that question every week.
Do you feel like you've had postpartum depression?
Nope. None.
That makes me really happy.
That makes me happy. Trust me. When my daughter was born, the day I left the hospital, I actually had to be seen by a social worker because of my birth mom. Not because of me, but because of my birth mom. The state required it.
And what did they ask you?
They just asked, like, how are you mentally? Do you think you can do this? Are you able to ask for help if you need to? Do you have resources? Here are extra resources for postpartum depression, baby blues. Here are the signs. Here's where to get help. You can call an anonymous number. They'll walk you through it. Do you have someone that can come right away? Or do you have someone you can talk to about this? Are you safe at home? Is your baby safe at home? How have your emotions been since you've had her? Just like an extensive just questioning, which, I mean, our state system's so screwed up as far as like foster kids go and just the way they handle the jail portion, like the fact that like people who do drugs get more time than people who do abuse or anything to a child. So the fact that they did that was kind of like a bravo moment for them, just because I didn't expect it, to be honest.
Yeah.
And then the day I was getting discharged, the nurse said, okay, well, a social worker has to come and talk to you. Like, what the heck? Okay. Did I do something? You did nothing wrong. You're perfectly fine. But because of your birth mom, we have to do it. Okay.
But that's like,
fine.
I feel like that, I mean, we need more money to be going into those people and we need to be setting that up for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what I said.
There are people who, you know, like someone like me, I feel like because of my situation with my own battle with depression and stuff like that, like I'm very self-aware and I can pinpoint my emotions like no other.
Mm-hmm.
But there are tons of people, like when I did the postpartum psychosis, she had never dealt with anything like that before.
Mm-hmm.
How is she supposed to know not only what are these feelings, but then how to handle them and what are they? And like, you know, it's like, oh, do you know to ask for help? It's like, I don't even know that I need help.
Mm-hmm.
We need people to be there for moms after birth.
I was telling my husband that actually, because they give you, when you get discharged from the hospital, they do give you, not with me, but like in general, a packet that says, like, these are the signs of postpartum depression. Like, here are the anonymous numbers, like X, Y, Z, whatever. But they make you fill out a paper, like the first 24 hours after you have the baby, and it asks you a question about your mental health. Like, have you cried today? Have you felt this emotion? Have you felt this emotion? And it's like, it's scored on, I think like it's out of like 11 points, I want to say maybe. I don't remember.
First 24 hours, like you're still in a hospital. You're still like, you're healing. Like you're doing all this stuff. Like, I feel like shit starts to hit the fan when people go home.
Yeah. And I was going to say, a lot of people can lie on those.
Yeah.
Like, you can make it seem like you're perfectly capable and you're perfectly healthy and you haven't felt depressed. You haven't felt sad. You haven't felt this in the hospital. But it's like, shit hits the fan when you get home and you don't have a nurse there anymore. You don't have a nurse able to take the baby to the nursery. Or even, like, if you're a single mom, for example, like, you went from having the nurses helping you to now you're by yourself. Or even like when my husband went back to work, literally like an hour after he left, I was like, how the hell am I going to do this by myself?
Mm-hmm.
I started crying and I was like, am I going to be a good mom without my husband? Like, I don't even know am I going to do this? Never once was it anger, but it was more of like just crying. Am I going to be able to do this by myself when he's not here? Am I going to be able to go to the bathroom by myself when he's not? Like, it was just, but it's like, you go to your 6-week checkup, but a lot of shit can happen between the time you get home and 6 weeks.
As we found out at the 6-week mark, it's like, you know, are you okay? And it's like, well, you know, I'm really tired. I'm kind of emotional. Mm-hmm. It's like, you just had a baby. Like, no.
Yeah.
It pisses me off that they're asking you at 24 hours because you're still in like a honeymoon phase. And even anything that's going wrong or anything, it's like, you're just like, I literally.
You're blindsided.
Well, I just did the most traumatic thing possible to my body. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're probably like, yes, I've been crying. Yes, I've been emotional, but I also just stuck a bowling ball out my vagina.
Basically.
And it's like, you know, there needs to be way more follow-up than that. Mm-hmm. There should literally be a doctor's appointment like 2 weeks after just for the mom. Just for mom. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, we have a – like every doctor's office should have some sort of like counselor, therapist or something on site that's like, oh, on your 2 week appointment, mom goes and she gets to talk for 30 minutes as just part of her regular birthing plan. Like,
Oh. And like when you have a baby, you bring the baby in for a 4 days after they're born, and then 2 weeks after they're born, and then a month after they're born. And her pediatrician actually asks mom, how are you doing? Mm-hmm. When he's examining the baby, like her pediatrician, I don't know if every pediatrician does it, but my daughter's pediatrician does. He literally has asked me every single visit, how are you doing? How are you doing mentally? Mm-hmm. Are you sure you're okay? Like, he goes, if anything's wrong, like, you can say it. He asks mom how they're doing. And then he'll go to dad and say, well, how are you doing, dad? Like, what are you going through? Like, are you okay? And it's like, why isn't my OBGYN doing this too? Why is my doctor not doing this?
Yeah, this is the pediatrician asking.
Why is my daughter's pediatrician asking me this? Because they know that you don't see a doctor until 6 weeks after the baby's born. And even then, they might not listen to you. I mean, my OB is amazing. And he asks you, like, are you sure you're like, when I saw him at 6 weeks, he triple checked before walking out that room. Are you sure you're mentally okay? Are you sure you're not trying to like keep anything? But a lot of OBs don't. Like she said, you just say, like, I'm tired. Like, that's a sign that something might be going downhill if you say, well, I'm tired a lot, or I'm just not feeling myself. Hello, those are red flags right there.
Well, and I think too that like there's a difference between, hey, how are you doing? You never, if you think someone is going through something, you are not allowed to ask them how they're doing just once. You have to push, because there are people.
You have like, to ask multiple times.
My wife is not someone who just openly puts her feelings out on the table.
Yep.
Usually what it is I ask her like 10 times, and by the 10th time she's crying, and then I'm like, can you just tell me? And then she'll tell me something finally.
I'm the exact same way. Like, my husband gets pissed off sometimes because he knows something.
You literally just, like, with me, it's literally just like, how are, and I'm like, oh my God, like, it's bad.
Yeah.
Not everyone's like that.
No. And like, that's the thing is like, and thankfully my OB was that doctor that asked multiple times. But if he was just like I told everyone during my pregnancy was hell. And my husband would get pissed off because I would tell people, oh, I'm fine. It's fine. Like, everything's great. And he's like, are you fucking kidding me? He's like, you're literally in bed, like curled up in a ball because you're so sick. He's like, no, you cannot just say you're fine. And I'm like, I'm good. And he's like, no. Like, no, just say what you need to say. And it's just like, I can't just do that. I can't just diarrhea of the mouth tell you how I'm feeling. And it goes back to the trust issues. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't, like, he's my husband, but even like, if you were to ask me like, hey, how are you doing? But like, you meant it. Like, I don't know if you mean it, because I have so many walls up with every person I talk to. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to what happened. If I can't even trust the woman who gave me my life, but then tried to end my life, like, what? There's something not adding up right there. So how do you expect me to trust you?
Also, let's talk about your level of trust when this person who did severe damage to you and your brother, she just got 155 years off her sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And then comes out and still won't own what happened.
What she did. Yep.
There is something to be said about when people will not own their actions. There's nothing that gets me more angry than when someone's just won't own it. And I'm talking very small things. I'm talking like, oh, I asked my wife where something is and it's in the wrong spot. And she's like, oh, I didn't put it there. I'm like, I know you put it there. Like, I'm talking small scale stuff here.
Yeah.
Then we go to you, and this is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how are you supposed to trust anyone or anything?
And it's frustrating because I get asked the question, would you want to meet your birth mom? Because normal kids who are adopted or who haven't gone through traumatic issues, and a lot of kids do, don't get me wrong, a lot of kids in foster care, adopted, that have gone through severe child abuse, severe drug abuse, severe, like, any on the spectrum, just in general, like, let's just talk about an ordinary kid who had no issues. The mom was just not capable of raising the kid and just gave the kid up for adoption. Okay, they're going to want to have a relationship with their birth parent. 90% of the time they do. They want to know their past. They want to know where they came from, who their mom is. Where, like me, I want literally absolutely nothing to do with that woman. Nothing. Because I know if I was to sit in a room with her and say, did you do what you did? She would say no. I would leave more angry and more disappointed, and that conversation would have gotten nowhere.
Can I say something to you? And I totally realize that I'm going to really, really put my foot in my mouth. When I asked you at the beginning, you know, your feelings about your mom, and you said that you've forgiven her for what she's done to you, but you've not forgiven her for what she's done to your brother.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say to you that, like, you don't have to forgive her for what she mm-hmm. did to you. And I feel like, again, I'm totally sticking my foot in my mouth, and I get that. I feel like you feel like you're supposed to forgive her.
Yeah, that is true. To be completely and utterly honest, I feel like, because being a Christian, I feel like, and this is my personal opinion, I feel like you're kind of expected to forgive what's happened to you in your past to move on, which I totally understand. But it's like, I feel like I was kind of forced to forgive her because everyone else around me was.
But here's the thing that you have to realize is that as Christians, we want to aim to forgive people, mm-hmm. but it doesn't mean that we just have to give forgiveness. Like, you know, like, she's done nothing. She's done none of the steps to give you a reason to forgive her. You know, yeah. we don't have to forgive people because they've done something bad, you know? And I get it. Like, I've never been in this type of situation. And, you know, I hear about parents who have had their children killed in school shootings and stuff like that. And the parents are like, you know, I forgive them. I don't want you. This is so hard because I don't want to, like, fuck with your head, but I also want you to be able to realize that, like, you don't have to forgive this woman if you don't feel like you're really ready to forgive her yet.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that then comes down to, again, people dictating your feelings about everything that you've been through, and none of us, and even your two brothers, and I would even go as far as say your three brothers, they don't know what you went through. Even though mm-hmm. you all went through a similar thing, every person's reaction to a situation is going to be different.
Yep.
And, you know, I say this all the time, like, God gives you what you can handle, and that's why God never throws anything my way, because he's like, listen, this fucker can't handle shit. And, you know, like, I don't want to sit here and be like, do not forgive your mother, but I'm just telling you that I want to validate your feelings, that if you don't forgive her for what happened, that's okay too.
Mm-hmm. And, like, and this is going to sound bizarre, but my husband thinks I'm crazy for saying this, but a part of me, and this is, like I said, I think the reason why, for what she did to me, for, like, I mean, I'm a perfectly normal person, like, physically, like mentally, physically, I have a lot of health issues because of the whole situation, but like, I don't have several, like if you saw me in the street, no idea who I am, you would not know that any of this shit happened to me because I don't show any signs of it physically. Mm-hmm. But with my brother, so like with me, I'm like, you know what? I was able to overcome 95% of everything that they told me was wrong with me. So therefore, I really don't have resentment towards you towards that, like what she did to me. But with my brother, like he was a healthy person and he still is healthy. But I mean, like he was going to walk, talk, be just like us, and he's not. And that's where I kind of draw the fine line of, do I forgive you completely because of that? Because I got to live a normal life. And like I said, this is going to sound crazy, but a part of me, this is going to sound bizarre, but I kind of thank her for what she did because it got me out of a toxic situation. Mm-hmm. And it put me in a life where I got everything that I needed to survive and to succeed in life. She was living in a one-bedroom apartment in downtown Avondale, living off of my dad's income. So who knows where, I mean, I most likely probably would have succeeded. I would have tried to, but I don't know what it would have been like. I don't know who I would have been. I don't know the life I would have now. And a part of me just kind of thanks her because it's like, I got an amazing family out of it. Yes, I don't get to see my brothers all the time, but I still have my brothers. But it's like with my brother that's paralyzed, it's like, how can you fully forgive for that situation? Like, he doesn't get to live a normal life like we do. And so that's where like the fine line of forgiving is for me.
Okay, going back to what you were saying, mm-hmm. about, you know, you kind of defied all the odds and you were able to live a pretty normal life, mm-hmm. despite what doctors said that, you know, you would be able to and stuff. But I feel like you need to give yourself a whole lot more credit than you are, because you did all that stuff.
You know, everyone tells me this, and that's, oh my gosh, that's funny.
You're almost saying it like, you know, I got lucky that I was able to do all this stuff. And it's like, you're not lucky. You're a strong person who was able to do all of this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Bad stuff happened to you and you were still able to go against what doctors thought that you would be able to do. And you were still able to live a normal life and a healthy life. And I just think that's like, you need to be giving yourself a whole lot more credit on that. Okay, so do you have any idea what your mom's doing now?
Nope, no clue. None at all. As far as I know, she's off parole now, so she literally can just do whatever the heck she wants. Which scares me, but...
And your brother, who is paralyzed...
Mm-hmm.
What is his life like?
Oh, he has an amazing life. So we're all 21. And he was only supposed to make it till he was 10. And he's still here. He has an amazing father. His mom passed away when we were 13, I want to say. 12 or 13. She was a nurse. They're the most humbling, kind-hearted, perfect family for my brother. They've adopted multiple kids with different issues. And so have my other brothers, actually. But he lives in an amazing house. He goes to school. He's still in high school. I think he's graduating next year. He's learning how to walk in like a wheelchair type of thing. He can say certain sounds. He knows who we are. He gets really excited, actually, when he hears our voices and we talk to him. He's obsessed with Dora the Explorer and cars, but he's all around just a happy kid. He is like the light of my life. I love that kid with all of my heart. He's just an amazing, amazing human being for what he's gone through, but he has an amazing, amazing family that's taken him in and have done great things for him.
I just, again, I don't want to give you pity because I know that's not what you want, but I cannot imagine all of the stuff that you went through. And I think that all four of you are, because here's the thing is, like, as I'm processing all of this, it's like, there's a lot to this story. Like, you know, I think most people focus on the bulk of it, which is the abuse as babies.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also this other element of it, of the four of you grew up as the Avondale quadruplets.
Yeah.
Like,
that's just what we were known by.
And it's, and I that also was... think about, like, when I was growing up, like, I would get so embarrassed by, okay, so, like, for me, I can say this because now I'm overweight and I used to feel bad saying it, but, like, growing up, my dad was, like, heavier.
Uh-huh.
Like, my whole family was really thin, but my dad was heavier, and I used to get so embarrassed by that.
Mm-hmm.
And now I feel awful because I'm overweight and my poor kids are going to my fat ass dad. But I used to get so embarrassed by it. And I'm like,
uh-huh.
When we're young, we get embarrassed by everything. And mm-hmm. I'm like, how hard was it? I'm just trying to think about how hard was it for you guys growing up being like, everyone's going to know that, like, my biological mom is this person. Everyone's going to know about this abuse that I went through. Everyone's going to know about the fact that I went to foster care and then I was adopted. Like,
mm-hmm.
kids need privacy.
Yeah.
Because we are so easily affected by everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I realized, like, everyone's focusing on the abuse, but I'm thinking about that. And then I'm thinking about your mom getting out 155 years early. That part of the story is where I'm just livid. I do not understand, if you get sentenced to 172 years in prison and you get out after 17.
Yep.
Like, how does that happen? And then I start to process about, like, what does that do to you for? You know, like, you know, I'm thankful that you were adopted and, you know, you said you had an amazing life and obviously your parents split up, but overall you had a good life. But it's like, for a good majority of time, your head got to hit the pillow every night knowing that, like, justice was being served and that this woman was where she was supposed to be, locked behind bars.
Yeah.
And I'm not even saying that your biological mom is going to come after you and try and attack you now, but it's, you were attacked and
mm-hmm.
like, where is the security in that?
And the funny thing is, well, it's not really funny, but so she lives in Avondale. That's where she is. I'm not even like, I don't even have to, I don't know where in Avondale she lives. Whenever I step in the city limits of Avondale, my stomach just goes numb. My whole body goes numb. And I am, like, on high alert 24/7 in that city all the time.
I 100% can understand that. Like, that makes total sense. That's total PTSD.
And it's kind of frustrating because it's like, why does that have to be me? Like, why do I have to deal with this? And it's like, anybody in any situation with any type of, whether it's like with anybody who gets out of prison that did something to you and you know that they're in that city, it makes your heart drop because, you know, I could see them at any given point. But why are they not behind bars? And it's like PTSD to the max. And that, it's just, it's horrible. I will never wish upon anybody, even my worst enemy, that feeling that I get when I walk into that city.
And I think what people have to realize is, like, if that might not be tracking for some people, I want to try and make it so they can understand. You were literally called the Avondale Quadruplets.
Yep.
You know, it's not like, for some people, it might be like, oh, when I go back to the old house that I grew up in where the abuse occurred, like, then I feel it. But, like, for you, because you were so young, you don't remember that apartment. You don't remember all that stuff. But, like, your name is forever tied to the city of Avondale.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, you can't – I'm shocked, honestly, that when you didn't – when you hit 18 that you didn't leave the state.
So I was supposed to go to NAU for college my freshman year because I wanted to get as far away from that city as possible. That was my ultimate goal. I couldn't go out of state, but I needed to get as far away from there as possible. I ended up going to a school 20 minutes from Avondale, and I lived on campus 20 minutes from Avondale.
Okay, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Again, anything I ask you, you don't have to answer.
You're fine.
If you had the opportunity,
mm-hmm.
and I don't even know if you would take it, but if you had the opportunity to sit down one-on-one with your mom and you could ask her or tell her anything, what do you think would come out of your mouth?
Why didn't you ask for help? First thing to come out of my mouth.
And you get that because you literally, I mean, you didn't experience what it's like to have quadruplets,
mm-hmm.
but you experience what it's like to have a baby. And,
yeah.
you know, you knew that if something came up to ask for help.
Like, I am the most independent person in the world. Like, I don't, even my husband, I struggle to ask him for help. But I know when it comes down to my child, if I need help or if I need a break, I'm going to ask. Because that's what you're supposed to do. No matter how strong, independent you think you are, you need to ask for help if you think you're struggling. Because that kid is relying on you to be there for them. And if you're getting she got handed help, literally. Like, that's the first question I would ask is, why did you not ask for help? And it goes back to the mental health stigma. Like, people just think that if you ask for help, you're such a weak person. And it's like, do you know how much strength it takes to ask for help? Do you know how strong of a person it takes for you to ask for help? Like, but why, that's the first question I'd ask her is, why did you not ask for help?
Is there anything else you'd want to say to her?
Why? Why did you do what you did is probably what it would be next.
Do you feel like there's anything that she could say that would give you any sort of peace?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry I did what I did.
Isn't it crazy that, like, how far
two words can go?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so, and it makes me so angry that those are just the two words that could make me just forget about it all. So angry. Because everyone throws those words out there like it's a grain of salt, like it means nothing. I'm sorry.
You're fine.
I don't mean to cry.
Don't ever apologize for crying around me. I cry all the time. It's so frustrating that she can't own it. Like, she cannot own up to what she did. And even if she said, I'm sorry, my hormones were all out of whack. Like, there's I listened to this postpartum psychosis. I talked to this woman. I realize now how insane hormones are after birth. I understand that when having four babies, like, things got out of hand and, you know, she couldn't do it. But, like, there needs to be some sort of accountability and there needs to be an apology. And she's
and never there never will be. And that's what makes me so furious, too, is I know in my whole life I will never hear, I'm sorry. I don't even need an explanation. I don't even need to hear I had postpartum depression. I had postpartum psychosis. Like, none of that matters to me. Just admit what you did and just say I'm sorry.
It's funny because I can tell talking to you that you are somebody who has definitely learned to compartmentalize their feelings. But it's so crazy to me at the same time that, like, you're not like a calloused, angry person.
No.
I would totally have expected that.
And it's funny because everyone that hears my story or talks to me, like, one-on-one, like I'm doing with you, 95% of the time, I get that exact reaction is, how are you not an angry, bitter person? How are you the most loving, compassionate, forgiving person I've ever met? How are you not bitter or angry as a person?
And why is that?
Because then she wins. That's why. She still will have control over me if I let what she did make me who I am today. She wins. And as stupid as that sounds, she wins. If it, what she did to me makes me this angry person. And I think it's also because I don't think she's a monster at all. I don't think she's a bad person. I think what she did was awful, obviously. But it's, I don't know if she just was not getting the love that she needed to get through it, if I'm being completely and 100% honest. Mm-hmm. And so it's like every person I encounter with, I try to, I mean, like, I'm not perfect, but for the most part, I try to be that person for them because you don't know what the hell anybody's going through.
I have one very last thing that I want to ask you to do.
Okay.
So I have no idea if podcast will even be a thing in a year.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine somehow, some way that your daughter's eventually going to hear this interview.
Yeah.
In whatever way it comes about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the whole point of my job as a photographer is, like, you know, I'm trying to help people remember certain times in their lives. And it's kind of the same thing with this podcast, is I want people to be able to look back and be like, you know, this is how I was feeling during that time. And, you know, maybe down the road, they're in such a better place that they're like, wow, I can't believe, like, that's how I used to feel about this or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I would love if you would just tell your daughter right now how it is that you're feeling about her, about being a mother, about everything. Because one day I hope that she can listen to this and just be so proud of you for everything that you've gone through and everything you've done.
I don't know why I'm crying.
It's okay.
I think my ultimate goal for my kids is to just make them feel loved all the time. And never be scared to tell me anything. And that's every parent's goal. But that's my main goal as a mom.
I think that's a really good goal. I think people should I don't have kids, and I know I should not be giving anyone parenting advice, but...
But you have Humphrey.
That's right. I just think there's so much bullshit...
To parenting, yeah.
...out there that's like, oh, you know, we need to make sure we get our kid into this certain school, or they have to make this team because this is the... Like, there's just so many things, but it's like, none of that matters. Like, no one is going to care in 15 years if your kid could speak Spanish fluently in second grade. Like, no one gives a shit.
No one's exactly.
But your kids are always going to remember that they felt loved, that they felt safe, that they felt heard, and that they could count on you and they could trust you. If you've been listening to this podcast for any amount of time, then... You know that, like I've said before, I have a thing with Disney fairy tale endings. And I don't have that. But there was something at the very, very end of our interview when we were talking and I was thanking her for, you know, sharing her story. And then she thanked me for allowing her an opportunity to share her story. She told me about something that happened. And... I feel like it's the Disney ending that I needed.
And I actually got in contact with the reporter that did the interview back in 1998 that did our story and that did our story recently. And I told him that I had a baby and everything. And he probably said the most powerful two sentences in an email I think I will ever read and will forever be imprinted in my mind. And it was, "You are not your mom. You will never be your mom. Don't ever think you're going to be your mom. And most importantly, what you're doing is taking such a negative, toxic story, and you becoming a mom has just turned that into the best situation in the world."
My hope for this episode and this podcast in general is to get people to speak up when things aren't okay. Whether that means that things aren't okay on the inside with you, or if that means that somebody is hurting you, or whatever it might be, I just want people to find their voice. Because I can't help but think about how different could these four children's lives have been if their mom had said to somebody, "Listen, I'm not feeling okay. Something is wrong with me. I'm wanting to hurt my babies." Like, speak up. I cannot stress that enough. Like, if people could just open up, and I get how tough it is to do that. Guys, I literally attempted to take my own life because I didn't want to talk about the things that were going on. I get it. And I'm so thankful that I'm still here and I've gotten to learn from that lesson. Not everyone is that lucky. And so if you're listening to this, I just want you to speak up. That's it. Before I go, I want you to know that there is a link in the show notes for this episode to an interview that the Quads did back when they turned 18. And I think everyone who listened to this should watch that. But if you don't have time to listen to all of it, I'm going to include a little audio clip from it that I think everyone should hear.
"But I will never forgive her in my heart for what she did to Brandon. I couldn't, because he was supposed to be just like us, and he's not.
Laughing and smiling and looking at you."
They had told us he was cortically blind and deaf, would never walk, talk, would never eat, might live to be 10.
"Come on, head up high. A smile so big, it lights up the sky."
Thank you guys for listening. I will see all of you next week.
Everybody has a secret.